This is his first day somewhere in August on the island of Crete, day 4 of J Crete, session number 2, and we're going to talk about performance tuning, iOS, Android applications. So, the topic, why introduce the topic is at J Crete and in ISIS newsletters and so on, we talk a lot about performance tuning, how do you look at a Java VM. And then Richard and myself, we work at the company where we're doing mobile developments, we're doing not Android. So that's currently our major place where we're using Java. Of course, then you have a different VM, a Delphi VM, so it's not a normal hotspot VM. And we were, just wanted to get input and ideas and share the little bit that we know around measuring and tuning on Android as opposed to normal Java applications. So that's the intro. So who has experience, or who of you have experience with Android? No, I see some. None.
Totally not.
Okay, you should like it. It's very nice. Almost as nice as iOS.
Almost as nice. You prefer writing in Objective-C?
It's a strange.
So those who have experience with Android, maybe let's start there. Have you done performance measurement, not just necessarily CPU time, but also memory, memory leak analysis, those kind of things? How have you done it?
And of course, well, I think the most important metric of performance on mobile apps is probably the response time. Because the user experience on mobile app is, I guess, the most important metric. People are so used to on their mobile getting everything fast, sometimes it takes too long, or I'm going to kill the app. It's not working, I'm going to kill the app.
It's what the user perceives as fluent.
Yeah.
That's the best. Yeah. No, it's way more responsiveness, it's way more important on mobile, we found, than on desktop or web environment.
Yes.
You might be reason not to use phone graphic algorithms.
Yeah, or other cross platform stuff, they all slow things down.
On the GUI responsiveness, though, Android pretty much takes care of that and tells you when the application very quickly tells you when the application is not responding. Or if you're doing something on the GUI thread that you shouldn't be doing.
Yes, it also has the strict mode that can eliminate every I/O in the UI thread.
Yes.
Can be eliminated. But it's not always what you do with data on the UI thread, it's also how you paint the things. There are several points where you can optimize the application. For example, I was reading a post from Roman B, the guy that writes most of the widgets. He noticed some lag in application, and the cause of the problem was it was overdrawing. Okay. Drawing a lot of time on the screen, and that was the only problem the application had at the moment. So it's what you draw and how you draw it, how you optimize the way that UI is being displayed, and of course you have the other performance issues with how you get the data to the user and how you process them. Sure. These are the different cases that you have to optimize.
And memory analysis. We reached maybe that 22 tracks and where we ran out of VM space. Isn't there some tips you can give from that experience?
So, maybe the tools, what tools do you use? I mean, that was 2 years ago, so we only had really the stack tracing, what DBMS to look at, to try and find memory leaks, and at least now there are a lot more tools. I don't know, is anybody, what's the one tool, TraceView? Have you used TraceView? Looked at that?
Not, there were some cases with memory leaks, but they were mostly with the context database leaking activities.
That's
the most common
one. The most common one,
yes. Otherwise, I have used the view that is. You can see all the views on the repository. Which, unfortunately, I had some issues with Android 2.2 devices. It was not a memory leak or not. It was just that the stack trace was too short to do all the UI. Basically, those two things.
It's also reminding you, there's a good article you wrote on memory leaks and how to avoid them. And I think a lot of the performance stuff, like you said, with the GUI stuff as well, it's sort of well-known areas where you first go in. If you have a context, first thing for memory leaks, or looking for context leak.
Because in Android applications you don't have many long-running tasks, maybe some service, but you tend to start it and then stop one after a few.
Yeah,
so a few seconds. So the most common is when the user dates, or if by mistake you start an activity and you have a reference to the previous activity. Those are the most dangerous things in Android applications. On the other are sort of living things that most are being encapsulated.
One of the interesting things I found coming back to responsiveness, not just on Android, this goes for any mobile platform, more front end desktop as well, is the main culprit that seems like performance issues is usually a badly designed web service layer, if you're talking to a backend, and with badly designed, I mean making the calls not too fine-grained. It's not based on the actual use cases of the applications. So you have the unfortunate thing is that there's a lot of tools these days where people shouldn't be coding, press buttons, and it generates some web service from a database they point you to, and you have this web service which isn't designed, but it's generated. And then, it's easy to develop, particularly once there it is. It's horrible performance, and that's a typical scenario where you get very bad performance on the front end. So one of the things that we do quite a lot is start measuring the round trip time, how much time is actually spent on communication with the backend and waiting for results, and to give us that aspect as well, which isn't to do with your native code so much executing, but waiting.
When you are dealing with bad web services design, or even when you are doing things that are too heavy to do, for example, Instagram uploading photos, what they do is they start as soon as you have selected the photo, they start uploading while you are playing around with filters and something like that. So when you finally decide which filter are you going to apply, what they do is they just send which filter did you use, but the photo is already uploaded to the Instagram servers. So sometimes what they do is try to to respond in advance what is supposed to do the user.
But in the end, this goes to Herman's point of having a good design. And here the good design is separating the heavy load of uploading the picture with the other half of the action, which is sending the
small data, the filter, the things that you...
Right. Yeah,
so I understood the use case. If you just look at the data that needs to be a photo, you would have created some API for uploading the final photo. Now they investigated the use case and said we can actually, with this use case, we can start sending the data here by the time the filter is applied. And that's what I'm missing. I do a lot of consulting, not so much these days, but especially on web services side, that interaction, looking at that layer, and it's very few times that I see people as designed for use cases. And that for me is the number one culprit. Even before you start analyzing tools or doing memory analysis or looking at threading and concurrency, that's usually the culprit. And if you sort out the web service layer, then it's way better.
What do you do? Yeah, I guess this is the things of approval. What do you do when, you know, it's an existing web service, so
which is not geared for the app?
Yeah. And they hired you to build the mobile app.
So this depends on your relationship with the client. If the client says that's a web service, you have to integrate with that. You're not going to pay for another web service or whatever. Then. In one app where we have that situation, horrible web service, SOAP service, IMAC, we built on the front end side what we call an anti-corruption layer internally, but for the client we call it an adapter layer. And what it does is it provides an API on a use case level to the mobile app. And internally, it would then try and change the data, adapt it, so that it can optimally make use of the API. It's not ideal, but it's better than calling the API directly from the different view controllers. And in some cases, we've convinced the client to actually, if they have something that's possible for a web app environment, and we're doing the mobile app, typically as a reduced scope of features, we tell them, let's run it in another web service in place that talks to the same architecture on the back end.
But D6, I was telling you last night, it's a communicator application for schools. So the schools basically are RSS reader. The schools have a CMS and they could put their news and everything in on the back end, and then that feeds through to all the parents who have this communicator. It started as a desktop app and now I have a mobile app. So one example in the API is you send the server a timestamp that says the last time I synced was this timestamp, and it sends you only the new items from that timestamp. But the very first time you log in, you send a timestamp 0, and it sends you everything for that school. So if the school has been in the system for 4 years, it sends you 4 years worth of data the first time you log out. And we told them, listen, the small Android devices are running out of memory, it's sending us too much JSON. And we said that. When we send you, only want us to display the last 30 items in any case. So just send us, when we send you a 0, you know what the time is now, send us the last 30. And they said, too big a change. What we'll do is we'll divide it into 8 different balls, because there are 8 categories of content, homework, or photographs, or whatever. So you ask us 8 times for, and we'll send you, we'll at least break up the 4 years into 8 different ones.
They were already making incremental things. So what was the big change?
Yes.
It was 0 to be 3 months back instead of 4 years.
Yes. So
it's less enough SQL.
So they wasn't, we couldn't, yeah. But probably just the guy from SQL queries wasn't there anymore, so they didn't want to change.
No, I from nice.
So we actually had to build into the mobile app, to actually do that in smaller sections, get the data, write it to the database, and the responsiveness of the application software. So then we had to go and look at how do we, now we need some user experience to tell the user something is happening at least, so that at least know something is happening in the background. We're loading, or look at this while it's loading, so show them the picture.
Yeah, I think this has to be done in every case, because you might have the best backend that responds in a few milliseconds, but the user might be on TPRS.
Yes.
Yeah. It might take 2 seconds to connect the server, 10 milliseconds to get the answer from the server, and 2 seconds to get it to the device. So the user has to wait.
About running out of memory when receiving a huge amount of data, is there any tools specific to Android in particular, maybe iOS or stuff like that, that tackle this kind of problem, that try to minimize? I think I'm not very familiar with WAVA, but I think they have a stream or a collection that goes buffering and then starts kicking out data out from the memory into file disk. Mm-hmm. Is there any similar set of tools in Android to try to avoid that getting out of memory or stuff like this?
I think you can use WAVA on Android. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. Is it regular WAVA or is it a stripped down version?
I think it's the regular one. That's actually what we used in this application, was WAVA.
So
I didn't write the code, so I sourced the developer if it's a mobile stripped down version, but I think it's the
normal one. I only used the normal one. How did you, maybe on a practical level, how did you, for those not familiar with Android, just a quick thing on VM sizes in Android as opposed to normal JVMs, and then the other thing is, how did you realize you were running out of memory due to the data? Why did you measure to see that that's actually causing a problem?
We'll have to ask Mitch.
Okay. Well, thank you for my call.
Get Mitch on the spot. I think he suspected, because it's so much data, that's probably where he started looking. The big restriction is heap size. So on 2.2 and 2.3, I think you are sometimes restricted to something like 12 megs.
You know, the basic for 0.1 was 16 megabytes. From 2.2, I think it is 24 megabytes.
But it's not guaranteed. Some of the small devices can still be 16.
The guarantee is for 16 megabytes, as it was in Z1, the first Android device. But most devices have gone over 16. But if you have 16 megabytes of heap size, of memory, but you have a UI, you have all the other code that is loaded, so it's not really...
One of the big changes coming from these big enterprise server environments to Android, for me, was you must think totally different about memory usage. You know, it's almost embedded in a way.
Both memory and CPU.
Yeah.
You have a CPU, of course.
Yeah, especially if anybody has experience in older, like J2ME.
Yeah, I remember those days. It's rough on J2ME.
This was a lot worse. Even the size of the packets had a significant impact.
I remember there was this app that I built, beautiful OO design, and then J2ME. And I had to, it had to be able to deliver to a feature phone via a web push. It had to be less than 64 kilobytes. And yes, this is the binary in the end. And so I had to, all the object structure, metadata, and so it takes a lot of extra bytes. I had to denormalize the whole thing. I basically ended up with one big class and one small helper class.
With a lot of obfuscation.
Yeah. And then you compile that and you obfuscate everything to take less.
So I got in at 63.2 or something, and that included some images, some backup images.
So that's actually a good point. What do you guys think is the good size for a mobile application in terms of the package? Because it's very easy in an Android app to get it a few megabytes. Yeah, you can easily get, you know, an app that you have to download, and it says, oh, but you're on 3G, are you sure you want to download 40 megs?
Does it have an impact when it's going to download this size?
You might have other applications.
Maybe.
That takes storage, but in terms of performance or boot up time?
The user might not have that much memory to install an application. Even 40 megs, unfortunately, some phones have only 200 megabytes for applications.
Mm-hmm.
After the first installation.
The thing is, my question is, apart from this, there's no other consideration, there's no other impact of
The impact is on the way you use the images. So Android has 4 or 5 basic kind of densities in terms of screen density. So when you use images, the best approach is to make sure you have the right size for its density, because otherwise the system must scale the image. So this takes more service, more CPU service to achieve.
Yeah, so usually the application package, the 40 meg one, would be because you have a lot of images in there and you have them scaled for all the screen sizes, but it'll only load the one image that it needs into memory at that time. So it could, if you use, say, you only have the high resolution one and use only that, then it will have to scale it in memory. Then you will quickly run out of memory, but it's not necessarily that if the application is large, you'll have memory problems. That depends on how you write the application.
And is there a way to generate a binary per device, or maybe vector images? No vector images?
Well, you could use the
9 bytes.
SVG library, this is a nice SVG library.
Yes, but I think it's bad for performance.
Yeah.
Due to all the calculations that need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
In the guidelines, I think it's use PNG, and if you want the scaling on demands, there's a special format that does for Android, 9 bytes.
Yes.
For the phones, there are a whole bunch of libraries which are phones images instead of images at all. Instead of using images, you can use fonts. So obviously, small images, but they are tiny in terms of memory.
That's useful mainly for iPhones or
Correct. Right, but still, you can save time there. How do you go, guys, about modularization of the application, loading pieces versus the whole thing? Do you cut it into pieces or not, the application?
The way Eclipse loads the plugins.
No, I'm talking about the Eclipse specifically. Let me give an example how we do in the web development. For example, we've been working on the project for Mercedes-Benz USA. They have a special program called European Delivery. So you can fly to Europe to the factory, they will give you a Mercedes, you spend 2 weeks in Europe vacationing with your wife. And then they would send it over, the car, your car, to the United States. It costs money, it's not free. So obviously not everybody wants to even to look at it. But there's a menu item. So unless somebody will click on this menu item, this piece of code is not even loaded on the client's machine. Do you do something
like that?
Right. It's in on the server. Do you do something like that? Do you modularize your large application?
Well, there's sort of two ways that Android provides for you to do that in activities and now fragments. So it does that for you. So activity is whatever the single screen you have now. And Android, as you start up activities, you load a new screen, it will take care of that for you. If it needs the memory, it will kill the old activity. It might keep it in the background, or so when you go back to it, it might restart it, or maybe it's there and it just resumes that same activity. So activities and then fragments is a way of modularizing one screen, and you can dynamically load fragments in and out.
But if you take my example, you have four menu items on the screen, and the fourth one is usually nobody cares about. Is it still a part of the code that you downloaded first? Are the images that you may need for that fourth menu item are downloaded?
Well, everything you need for the application is usually in the one APK. Can do things like plugins. Because you have a very good inter-application communication mechanism in Android. So you can send in things, it's called, between activities. Yeah. So you could have, with one of our applications, we have a plug-in framework for the application. And all you need to do is, you need to communicate to the application in the correct way, using certain intents, sending in certain data, and then you can modularize it, where it's a completely separate application that runs or doesn't run.
You treat the application as something that can run offline, that's something like self-contained online device.
Yeah.
Yes. You don't pull stuff from the
screen. You can pull stuff. You can pull content. You can pull, say you need more audio or images or whatever. You can pull content.
But dynamic loading of code, no. And we don't do that.
Code is not that much of the force, but not that much panels. Of course, all these resources, extra, like videos and images, they can be on the server.
And a lot of the time we do that, because then you can dynamically update your resources. So we put them on the server, you put a web service, and you cache. They have very nice caching, image caching libraries specifically, where you tell it cache this, you can tell it on the SD card or internal memory for how long, when it should check again. So we do that.
We have to wrap it. Thanks all.
Yes.